Okay, we are at 5:30, and I would like to welcome everyone to the Tompkins County Legislature. It is Tuesday, April 19th, 2022, 5:30. If you could please join me for the Pledge of Allegiance.
The flag of the United States of America, and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you all. Roll call of members.
Ann Corman. Ann Corman. Mike Lane.
Here.
Greg Mezzi.
Here.
Veronica Piller.
Here.
Lee Shurtleff.
Here.
Mike Sigler.
Here.
Randy Brown.
Here.
Amanda Champion.
Here.
Deborah Dawson.
Is the sound not working? Not working.
I don't think they can hear you. Can you hear us now?
Yes, thank you. Thank you.
We're doing a roll call. Can you hear us?
Yes, hear you, Kathy, and we heard Dominic.
Okay. We're doing a roll call right now, members present. So, Deborah Dawson.
Here.
Here. Henry Granison.
Present.
Rich John.
Thought I saw him here. He's here, but he may not be able to hear you again. I don't know.
Rich, can you hear me? I'll mark him as present. Dan Klein.
Here.
Ann Corman.
Present. I don't see Rich on here, by the way.
We do.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Travis Brooks. Shauna Black.
Here.
13 members present.
Thank you, Kathy. Next, we are going to go to the presentation of proclamations. And we do have Amanda Champion, legislator, here to bring forth recognition for one of our very important staff members who has been with us for a very long time. And I would like to give the floor to Amanda Champion.
Great. Well, thank you. Tonight I would just like to share my appreciation and welcome you all to share your appreciations for Jim Blizzard, who is up in our audio and video recording studio. Jim has worked for the county for quite a long time. I believe he started when we were still in the old jail facilities. If someone can correct me if I'm wrong. Kathy's nodding. So he's been here for quite some time. He set up a pretty incredible state-of-the-art video system, which broadcasts out to, we have a cable channel. He set up all kinds of audiovisual processes for us. Let's see, what else? He's really been instrumental in building and creating and changing these services so that county legislature meetings can reach the wider population. I believe that we do have a new media assistant, production assistant, which I think he was maybe introduced last week. So Jim isn't going anywhere just yet. A bit longer, but we felt like this was a really good time to honor him and share an appreciation for everything he has done for the legislature and the county over the years. We do have a certificate of appreciation which I would like to give him if he wants to come down, or we can wait until later. It's up to him.
Come on down, Jim. You're the next contestant. No, I'm just joking. Great. Thank you, Amanda. We'll wait till Jim gets here because I know that there are probably others. Welcome, Jim. Yay! It's nice to see the person behind the scenes actually come up to the stage. So,
thank you so much.
We're very appreciative of the work that you have done for so many years. And I come in on the weekend or in the evenings, and you are here too, constantly. So thank you for taking care of all of our media, and just know that we really appreciate your work and your dedication. So are there any other legislators that would like to speak in regards to Jim leaving us? We have Mike Sigler and then Mike Lane.
I know. You got to stop running away, Jim. It's you know, when Jim first started doing media here, you know, it took him forever. He had to carve it all out of stone. It was really backbreaking work. But no, really, Jim, one of the big things that we want to do is and be is transparent. And without your work, we're not. I mean, this is the way things are now, right? And the fact that you've been able to go from like a, you know, just one camera, you know, not even a camera when we did this, and now a camera, and now we have multiple cameras, and you've grown with the job. As the job has grown, you have grown, and that it's really remarkable to see that kind of happen. Like somebody that's able to take on each challenge as it comes. And move the ball forward for us. So I don't want you to think that that doesn't go noticed by people, because it's not as easy, you know, to do all that as some people may think. The magic doesn't just happen, basically. So, you know, I don't know what house you're going to choose in Gryffindor. You know, that's all I'm suggesting, you know, at Hogwarts. But the magic has certainly happened, and we were able to do all this, and you were able to do all this. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Mike. Mike Lane.
What do you say about someone like Jim Blizzard, who's been with us so long? And I've been pleased to serve on the old Board of Representatives and on the Tompkins County Legislature while Jim was there to bring us alive to the people on cable throughout the county. Few people understood all the things necessary to produce the twice monthly legislature meetings, and from time to time the committee meetings that we have. There was a time when we were doing all the committee meetings on cable TV. That, of course, morphed as well as cable to live streaming. There wasn't a task that we talked about needing, as far as publicity was concerned, that Jim wasn't willing to help us with, and to figure out the least expensive way for us to do that. He put things together in the control rooms, first in the main courthouse, and then here, with gum and wire and paper and whatever was needed, so he made them work. We have reruns of our meetings that are done several times a week, and he oversees that. He told me he has a camera set up upstairs on a screen to make sure that he can check from his home, that doesn't happen to have cable, and make sure that the playback is happening properly. And I'm sure if it wasn't, he'd be the first in the car to come down here and figure out which button to push to get it going back together. Jim, of course, came from Dryden years ago. His family lived in Dryden, naturally. And we're very, very proud that Jim has spent a large part of his career with Tompkins County. I wish you weren't going, Jim. I still think your advice and expertise is going to be needed in the future. But thank you for what you've done for us. Thank you for what you've done for the people of Tompkins County. What you've done is meaningful. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Dan Klein?
Jim is a fellow redhead, and we're both fading at about the same rate, I would say. Jim is a former Town of Danby resident. Please note that he left Dryden to come to Danby. Jim and I worked together at Tompkins County Cooperative Extension for many years, starting in 1999. That's when I started. You were there already, so I don't know how far back you go. Jim is a very independent and original thinker, and if you have a long conversation with Jim, you will be a richer person for it. Some of you may not know this one, that Jim is also an expert in what's called primitive pursuits. He can make a fire with sticks and all that kind of stuff. And in the last 2 years during the pandemic, I've spent many evenings here Zooming because of lack of broadband at home, and my companion in the chambers was often Jim, the wizard up in the tech booth. So, Jim, you will be missed, and good luck with whatever comes next.
Okay. Jim? Oh, we have Lee Sherliff?
Just briefly, I'm always amazed in the course of a month at the number of constituents that will stop me on the street or in the diner or wherever it may be and mention how they had viewed me or my predecessor or the activities of this board. You've kept us connected to our communities through the work you've done. And Jim, I think I'm partially here because even after I took my little hiatus after 30 years, I kept watching every week, and you made this group look good and desirable, and I personally owe it to you for your work to keep the interest up and keep our constituents informed. Going to miss you. It's been good working with you over the years.
Lee, who's going to make us look good now? You're not answering. Rob Henry.
Rob Henry.
He's pointing to himself up there. That's good. Thank you very much, Jim. We really appreciate you.
Thank you.
And I just want to say thank you, too, for making sure that all that work for so many years didn't go to waste, that when I moved out, somebody moved in. And I'm very glad that there's a county position. I've been a contract person for all these years, not a county employee. So I'm glad that the county stepped forward and hired a full-time person to do this and more work instead of doing less. I really believe it's important for our government representatives to be visible, whether or not anybody watches the channel 15, you know, whether or not they watch it, they know they can. And I think that is extremely comforting to the people who feel so helpless in so many parts of the country where they have no idea what their elected representatives are doing. And I know the men sit in bars and they talk about those people making the decisions for us. And here I'm really hoping that you expand out and do a lot more committee coverage on the cable as well as on the internet, because still there are a lot of people that don't use computers. And thank you for, as I said, keeping it going and funding it.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we will not have an executive session this evening. Yeah. Let's see here. Privilege of the floor. We have one person here in our audience. Mr. Lynch, did you have comment tonight?
No, I'm just here as an observer.
Okay, very good. And we did not have anyone write in for the Zoom link for privilege of the floor. Municipal officials, I see that we have Patrick Miller from the City of Ithaca. Hello, Patrick, and welcome to the legislature.
Hi, it's lovely to see you on Zoom. I think I saw many of you in person 2 months ago, 3 months ago. But very quickly,
George McDonald and I don't have
a lot of updates since George was there at the start. I can share that the city council passed the bill relating to notification of tenants that George spoke to us about 2 weeks ago. And besides that, our planning and economic committee, some of the things that they'll be talking about include our kickoff of our electrifying of the city. The East Hill Fire Station is going to be moving. So we'll be disclosing and talking more about that on Wednesday's meeting as well as talking about TIDES, which is, let me get the acronym right, the Ithaca Dedicated Encampment Site relating to the homeless encampments in the jungle, sort of over by the Walmart. But besides that, we don't yet have an agenda for City Administration Committee, and we don't yet have an agenda for Common Council on April 4th. I know for April 4th, the one presentation list that we'll receive is around the city redistricting lines, and I'm sure that has implications on you guys at the county as well. More than happy to answer any questions. I can refer you all or at least get some questions back, and usually George, I think, will be the one to answer them in 2 weeks, but more than happy to take anything.
I believe Buffalo Street, for the water main replacement, and they're talking about 2 months. Is that going to cause a traffic headache?
Sure. So the current plan is that it shouldn't. So East Buffalo on the 500 block just started. I drove through it yesterday, and they're trying to keep it open during sort of the busy times when people are driving. But that did remind me that William Street is getting a full overhaul in the same region, and that is also doing its best to not impact anybody living there. But Williams is sort of the immediate street that connects Eddie and Stewart, so those areas start construction next week.
Thank you.
Rich John.
Thank you for coming to the meeting, Patrick. I was curious, the pedestrian bridge over the inlet at Cecil Malone Drive, I had heard that that was actually going to go forward. Is that this season that that's going to get constructed, or is it farther off?
I can definitely double check and get back to you, Rich. I know that the bridge that there's two big projects. I know one is this season and one is next, and I'm not sure if I'm confusing with the other one over by Cornell's engineering campus. But I'll double check with you. I can look it up quickly now and get back to you.
Okay.
Henry Granison and then Greg Muzzy.
Yes, thank you, Patrick. Can you update me on where the firehouse is in theory going?
Sure. So the East Hill Fire Station is currently on College Ave. So it's in between Dryden and down to Eddy. The plan is for it to move into what is in the city, the third ward. I believe it is still going to stay within County Ledge District 4, from my understanding. But it's moving for like much, much, much further down Dryden at the cross intersection. Let's see, I have it right here. So whatever the cross street with Oak is, give me 2 seconds. I can find it. Dryden and Elmwood. So Dryden and Elmwood, Dryden's like this. This is Elmwood. This is Oak. So it's going to be on the corner going into Elmwood. Or that's where it's proposed, at least. I guess we'll be voting on it and talking about it, but that's what's proposed.
Any other questions, Henry? Any other questions?
Yes, I was wondering whether any other proposals.
We can't hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I was wondering whether there's any other proposals or where the station would go. Or is it the only one?
That's the only proposal that we had on the Common Council received, just to move it there.
Okay, thank you.
Of course. And I just dropped in the Zoom link, it's on page 19 of our City Planning and Economic Development Committee agenda for tomorrow, and it shows why it's been chosen to move there in relation to calls that they get.
Okay.
Greg Muzzy.
Hey, Patrick, thanks for coming. My question is about the fire station as well. Is there a public comment or public period that you'll have for that location? I know that's a very transitional, heavily residential, you know, much less commercial than, you know, or at least that's what the community, you know, that resides there represents. Is there going to be any discussion with the community or open to feedback, or is this pretty much a done deal on the fire station?
There's public comment tomorrow. It's also not a voting item for tomorrow, so it's just going to be Chief Parsons sort of sharing everything that's going on. But I believe we're planning to vote on it in at least a month. So there's at least two more public comment sections where folks can come in to talk about it. I think just one important thing with the fire station in general is that its design and what's going to be there is shifting significantly from what's currently in College Town. And so it's, if you sort of look at that agenda, and there's a report of it, but it's intended to look much more and act more like it's in a residential neighborhood than it is in a urban neighborhood. So, and one exciting thing at least about it as well is that it's at least 80% going to be fully electric as part of our Ithaca Green New Deal. So there's still a couple of things to do to make sure that we can get electric fire trucks to get to fit in the station and be able to, they can be charged, but everything else about it is going to be electric.
I just have one question, and that is, how is this going to be funded? Hello, Patrick? Okay. Patrick, are you there?
I'm more than happy to take any questions. I think other than that, Rich, I'll get back to you about the bridge by Cecilon Drive, unless anybody else had things that they'd like me to check in with the city.
We cannot hear Shauna's microphone on Zoom at all.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Patrick, I was wondering, how is the new fire station going to be funded?
Sure. So there, from my understanding of it, we have a current proposal from a contractor who is taking down the College Town one, and then the city is putting in, I believe, most of the immediate money for the fire station, but that the tax parcel of the old fire station, when it's built, is going to basically remake of that over time.
Okay. Any other questions for Patrick? Okay, I don't see any. Thank you so much for coming to our meeting tonight. We appreciate it.
Of course. Thank you all so much.
Okay. Let's move to legislators' privilege of the floor. Dan Klein?
Yeah, I found out something recently that I wanted to share. You know, the COVID test kits that we were able to get from the federal government through the Postal Service, I found out you can now get a second one. Everyone is automatically eligible, and that was news to me, but it was good news, and so I just wanted to share that with everybody. And then also, for those of you that took advantage of it the first time, you may remember that it took maybe a month or something like that to arrive. Well, this time it only took like 3 days. They've apparently caught up, so just wanted to share that information. Thanks.
Thank you, Dan. Anyone else for a legislator privilege of the floor? Okay. Next, we'll move on to the chair's report. I have a very short report tonight. Last week, I shared a message with the community regarding the state's investment for child care in the 2023 budget. As I said in the message, I hope that our local providers and families will take full advantage of the resources being made available to New Yorkers. There will be grants available to organizations providing care and subsidies also available to an estimated half of all families with children. If your family is anything like mine, it will definitely help with the financial scene. As more information becomes available, we'll look to our departments to help get that information out to the families that could use that help. I'd also like to thank our Climate and Sustainable Energy Advisory Board for hosting a presentation for the community on the scope and plans for New York State on climate action, including a Q&A with community members. This is a great example of one of our advisory boards helping to inform the community. The event is available on our YouTube channel, and I invite legislators and staff to view the event and continue to share with community members. And then last, I would like to thank our highway department for the readiness and work with our recent snowstorm. My kids were definitely hoping for a snow day, and they were very disappointed when I had to wake them up this morning to go to school. But they were ready to clear the roads, salt the roads, and we really thank them for being alert and ready for that. I hope this is the last big snowstorm of the season, but at the same time, we should thank our dedicated plow drivers and truck drivers and all of our highway employees, too. That is my report. Oh, I also have an appointment, and I would like to appoint Teresa Ficchio to the Workforce Development Board. She's a mandated partner, vocational rehabilitation representative, and her term expires June 30th, 2022. Next is reports from our staff. Report by County Administrator Lisa Holmes.
Thank you, Shauna. I have a brief report tonight as well. I also wanted to echo your thanks to our highway crews and to give a thanks on behalf of the Slaterville Volunteer Fire Department. My understanding was that our crews were very active in Slaterville this morning, assisting the Volunteer Fire Department with tree removal. There were areas where there were downed wires, and the highway department helped with the tree removal and traffic control where needed, in addition to their other duties. So another shout out to our staff helping with the effects of last night and this morning's storm. Second, I just wanted to give a preview and to say that in the New York State budget, we're pleased to see the end of the local sales tax diversion for aid to municipalities and distressed hospital funds. That amounts to nearly $700,000 in annual savings to Tompkins County that state diversion of local sales taxes ended. So we're glad to see that, and other impacts of the New York State budget on the whole seem favorable to the county. We'll be looking in more detail at all of these impacts at next week's budget retreat on the 26th. And then lastly, we have our public health director, Frank Krupa, here for a brief update. We've had a recent uptick in the area on COVID, and Frank is here to give a brief update and answer any questions. Frank?
Thanks, Lisa. Yeah, just wanted to give some updates on where we are and what we've got going on around COVID. I think everybody's aware our case numbers have been higher than we want them to be. It started with higher education and now really is, you know, kind of more spread throughout the community in general. So that's the less than good news. I think the good news is our hospitalization numbers have remained very low. And that's really what we've been targeting, is trying to look at the severity of illness, including those hospitalizations. And so far, that has been a good reflection of the work that we've done here. And I think, quite frankly, has been directly impacted by our vaccination rates. So having more people vaccinated really has helped as we've seen these case numbers go up. So would encourage those that aren't vaccinated or not up to date to continue to seek out those vaccination opportunities. And they are, vaccines are fairly readily available at local pharmacies and through some of our healthcare providers. Just to talk a little bit about designations, right now we are designated as a medium level in the CDC's metrics because our case counts are over 200 per 100,000. and they've been that way for a while. But we're not high because our hospitalizations remain low. But if you look at the state map on the CDC website, there's kind of a red line from Pennsylvania to Canada of counties where that are high, where we are the only yellow county. So certainly case numbers are up, and we'd like to see those come down. But thankfully, the severity of the illness has not been significant to date here in Tompkins. What are we doing about some of this? We have ordered more masks and test kits. The test kits are in the process of going out through our library systems and some of our municipal community partners that have asked for them. So they will be available out in different parts of the community. And we are doing the same thing with masks while also planning for some points of distribution where we'll set up and be able to hand the masks out generally. But we are trying to make sure that people have access to the tools that they need in order to keep themselves protected. Did want to talk a little bit about treatment. We've mentioned it a couple of times in the past, but antivirals are now readily available. So particularly for our most at-risk individuals, seniors, and those that are immunocompromised, if they have symptoms and test positive for COVID, they really should talk with their healthcare provider about potentially getting a prescription to get one of the antivirals to help, because it can help lessen the severity of the illness, particularly for those folks most at risk. So those antivirals are available. Talk with your healthcare provider about getting access to them. And the last thing I wanted to mention was wastewater. I know some of you have gotten some questions from your constituents about wastewater sampling. There is wastewater sampling happening in Tompkins County. It's been through the Cayuga Heights wastewater treatment plant. We have now, our Environmental Health Division has worked with the Ithaca wastewater treatment plant in the state to get them into the state program. So sampling has begun or is very close to beginning in throughout the Ithaca wastewater treatment system, which will, you know, give us an opportunity to have data around that wastewater impact from COVID moving forward. There is a state website that all of that data is uploaded to that folks can, you know, simply Google New York State wastewater data and can see that. Once Ithaca has data up there, we will, of course, be, you know, linking to that from our information as well. I did want to mention, because the question came up about why we haven't been doing wastewater sampling. Well, it has been done to a degree at Cayuga Heights, but not, you know, through our largest system to date. And really the reason for that is wastewater is an indicator when you don't have other indicators. And we are still testing between 500 to 1,000 people a day in our community for actual COVID. So we have data about the disease in our community, and wastewater is kind of in preparation for a time as testing becomes less ubiquitous and less used, particularly over the summer and then going into next fall as an early indicator. So we haven't been missing out on knowing what's going on because we didn't have expansive wastewater testing, but now we're in a place where it's prudent to be prepared as we, you know, continue to move forward through the pandemic. So that's really what I wanted to share, and I'm happy to answer any questions anyone has.
So, Frank, you know how we've always asked if we could duplicate you? You actually had two of yourselves on our screen.
And they saw that, and they weren't. My mouth wasn't going the same. It was very disconcerting.
Yes, yes. It was almost like it was your twin, your evil twin. So, okay. Are there any questions for Frank? Ann Corman?
Thanks, Madam Chair. Frank, thanks for the update. And so with the change in mask mandate today, I was wondering, and I don't know if you know the answer to this, but are healthcare settings locally and our public transportation, such as TCAT, are they still requiring masks?
Yes, so there is a New York State mask mandate for those facilities coming out of the New York State Department of Health, and the governor today has emphasized that those mandates still remain in place. So our local airport, TCAT, public transportation, there is still a requirement, and healthcare facilities that are licensed by the state are still required to have masking.
Okay, Okay, so our airport, if you're in the airport, but once you get on, depends on what airline, what their restriction is, I would imagine, right?
Yeah, I think once you get on the airplane, it would shift over to the policy of the particular airline you're traveling with.
Okay, thank you very much.
Any other questions for Frank? Veronica?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Frank. Anecdotally, I feel like I've recently been seeing a lot more people getting sick with non-COVID acute illnesses. And I'm wondering if you can just offer any advice on how to think about that or how to behave as the COVID pandemic specifically is changing.
Yeah, it certainly has happened. We've seen a lot of upper respiratory illness that is not COVID. It's gone through my house multiple times, having a seven-year-old. Part of it was masks coming off, particularly for children in the schools. The masks were working in preventing disease spread, and that includes things beyond COVID, and I think we're now kind of seeing the impact of that, as well as the, you know, the reduction of other public health measures that were in place. I think generally speaking, the message, the public health message is the same as it was before COVID, during COVID, and will be after COVID. If you're sick, stay home, cover your coughs and sneezes, wash your hands often, and, you know, seek health care if, you know, if you get sick enough to need it. But that's really the message, right? And there are additional steps with COVID, the masking, social distancing that, you know, we would encourage particularly those that are high risk to continue implementing. But now it's back to those core messages that will help us limit the spread of all the transmissible diseases that we encounter.
Thank you, Frank. Any other questions for Frank? I see none. Thank you, Frank. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Lisa, do you have anything else for us tonight?
That's it. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. County Attorney Bill Troy.
I don't have very much to report other than about a week ago Friday, the Chipola-Dennis case was argued before the Court of Appeals down in New York. Jonathan Wood, we brought him back since he had handled the case below. The case, the argument is actually on the court's website. If you want to listen to it, you can't see it, but you can listen to it. And if I were a betting man, I think Jonathan did a really good job. So we should get a decision when the court issues it. You don't call them up and ask when you're going to do it. So as soon as I get a copy of it, I'll pass it on to you folks.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for Bill? Okay, I see none. Thank you, Bill. Next is the Director of Finance, Rick Snyder. Hello, Rick.
Hello, good evening, everybody. We have three sales tax reports to give to you for January, February, March, and those were sent out to all of you yesterday in an email so that you can review them more thoroughly, but I will share my screen and share those with you momentarily. First, we're going to start with the room tax report for the first quarter. That's also in your agenda packet on pages 5 and 6. And so we'll start there with room tax. You should be seeing room tax report now on the screen. Do you see that?
Yes, we do.
Very good. Thank you. For the first quarter of 2022, it's in this left-hand column over here. It shows 21 versus 22, and we have total receipts coming in at $383,989. And that compares to just $167,000 last year at this same time. So that is remarkably up 129.5% for the year. If you'd like to see the breakdown between what portion was hotels, that's in the middle column of the report for the first quarter, and bed and breakfast, that contribution is over here in the right-hand column. So we've had a really good first quarter for room tax. I'd like to thank Lisa Schott and the Treasury Division, Nick Helmholt, Planning and Sustainability Division for providing these numbers. Some of the questions that are most normally asked by the legislators I'd like to address here in these comments. Under hotels, All the establishments sent in returns except for five. Two are owned by the same person, and they hadn't sent in their 2020 occupancy tax returns, nor have they paid their taxes in 2020. But, and this is a big caveat, they did recently submit their returns for all of 2021, and they paid all of 2021. And this is a result of the county attorney's office helping write letters and getting some progress being made on these back payments on this one hotel. The county attorney office, along with Lisa Schott, will be working on further legal action to make sure that their 2020 returns are soon submitted and paid for. And so, although they're behind, those two hotels that are owned by the same owner have made some progress since the last time we had a report. Of the hotels, five were sent reminder letters, and one of those five has recently paid their delinquent bill in this current month, April. For the bed and breakfasts, all establishments sent in return except for two. That was a remarkably good return rate. Both of those establishments were sent delinquent letters, and there were four new bed and breakfasts on our rolls for this past quarter. I like to share, even though it'll look very small on the screen, you can look at this on your own. I've shown years from 2012 right up to date to 2022 of all the quarterly returns. You can see this first quarter coming in at $383,989 for the first quarter of 22, with an additional $34,500 thereabouts coming in for late payments, proceeds from other periods that would represent delinquent payments. So we've shown this many years because you liked this table last time when we shared it, and we still like it, with a small graph here underneath that shows each quarter's return. The detail over here on the left simply shows the breakdown of hotels and bed and breakfasts. We have total lodging establishments of 121, 30 of which are registered hotels or motels, 91, that's probably the highest number we've had, registered bed and breakfasts, delinquent hotels and motels, that's the five number, and delinquent bed and breakfasts, only two. So that is pretty much it for the room tax report. Are there any questions on this before I go into sales tax?
Mike Lane.
Hi, Rick. This report is very good. I appreciate it. You mentioned that there's one delinquent hotel, I think it was, that has paid its 21 tax and not its 20 tax. Why do we allow that? Can't we take what they paid and apply it to the 20 and say they owe the 21?
Not really, because I don't know the legal background. It's not like property taxes where you have the most recent period first and not the oldest one. That's by law here in state law. In this particular case, we accepted the payment, and that was pretty much my call for 2021. Because that's the returns that they sent in. They sent in returns for four quarters of 21 with exact matching payments for 22. So we took it. We took the money and ran, thinking that something was better than nothing. And we are still going after them for the 2021 returns and taxes. We really don't know what they are, what they owe, until, of course, they voluntarily submit their returns.
Okay.
Greg Mezzi. Oh, Bill Troy has a response.
I can reply to that. I'm familiar with who this is, and we're about to apply the principle of enough when it comes to non-payments. So we'll be pursuing this with some aggressiveness.
Thanks, Bill. Greg Muzzi?
Yeah, I think this question may be more for Bill than for Rick, but Rick, I always appreciate a great report that you give. What mechanism do we have in place? Because the fine or the penalty for not payment of this, it's the cheapest financing that a hotel company can get. And so, you know, early in the pandemic, why would you pay your sales tax, right? Or your occupancy tax? Because it was such a low fee, right? When you look at the length of time that it takes for the county to collect on it and all of these things, from a business standpoint, it made a lot of sense for that payment to be delayed. I don't necessarily agree with that philosophy, but thinking, you know, as a with a business hat on, and I said from the beginning, because I sit on the SDPB and on the budget committee for that, that the penalty for not payment is not enough. What mechanism do we have as a legislature to look at the penalty for that? Because it really should be much higher than it is, because we're really financing these folks at a very cheap rate.
I'd like to reserve the right to come back and talk to you folks about that. I'm not completely up to speed with it, but as I said, if we need to get a judgment and file it and foreclose on the restaurant, or the hotel rather, we'll do it. Right. I don't want to be vicious, but by the same token, enough.
They've collected it. They need to remit it.
They didn't collect it. They should have collected it. That's really not our problem. So.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know if this would be a topic that we would take up at PDEC or if it would be STPB first, but I would be...
Why don't we take it up in PDEC, and Bill can plan on attending that meeting, and you guys can dive into that. Is that all right, Ann Corman? I don't see Ann Corman.
Yeah, I'm here. I'm just wondering if that would be more budget or... got, you know, something more to do with finance rather than tourism, per se, but if you think that's okay.
We could do budget as well.
We could do two. I'll go on the road show.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, why don't we do budget since it's collecting taxes?
Okay, because we're often pretty tight on our PDEC schedules, too.
Okay. Deb Dawson, tag, you're it.
Yeah, that's fine. We just eat bonbons in BCP.
Okay, good. That'll keep you busy then. Greg, did you have anything else?
No, that was just what.
That's great. Thank you. I think Rich John, do you have your hand up?
I do. You know, I take what Greg said, and I certainly we want to be paid. But I did want to just sort of provide some historical context here that in the pandemic, our hotel businesses in our county were probably some of the hardest hit businesses. The floor dropped out from under them. You know, it's gratifying to see this report from Rick where there's been a lot of catch up. And we certainly do want to get payment from those that are still delinquent. But... you know, it's pretty understandable that they got well behind. They were struggling to survive through this crisis. So some consideration, I think. Anyway, thanks.
Thanks, Rich. We have Mike Lane and then Greg Muzzi.
I agree, Rich, that they were hurt. But, you know, they only have to pay the tax on their actual rentals. And that tax is paid by whoever rents the room and should be properly segregated from the funds that are received by the hotel or the bed and breakfast. So it really, they're just a conduit for them to use that money for other purposes. I've always said for years is not proper, and that they ought to have a separate and segregated escrow account for that tax money.
I agree with you, Mike. On the other hand, if our hotels all went bankrupt, you know, we'd be having a different problem right now. You know, certainly they should segregate the payments, you know, but businesses try to stay in business. And I think that's what we saw.
Deborah Dawson.
Yeah, I just want to reiterate Mike Lane's point. These are trust funds, basically. The hotels collect them, but they belong to the county from the minute they're collected. So, I realize that we want to accommodate our businesses in bad times, but it doesn't look like it's bad times anymore.
Greg Muzzy.
Yeah, Rich, I appreciate the comments, too. I don't want to have my comments, misconstrued that I'm not pro our hotels and don't recognize the hard times that they went through. I do think that this is just the fundamental flaw in our system, and going forward, we should look at it, right? Obviously, I think we should have done a lot more, and I came and spoke as a citizen before on the legislature that we needed to do more for our hospitality industry through recovery funds and things like that, which we didn't get out the door fast enough. So I get it, but I just think moving forward, we really need to look at that as a policy, and to Deb and to Mike's point, they are funds that are held in trust, and we need to make sure that those get to the appropriate places. So I think this was a learning that came out of the pandemic, and this is something that moving forward hopefully will make our policy stronger and make sure funds are getting to the right place at the right time.
Thank you. I actually have a question for Rick. I was wondering if whenever you captured the delinquent funds, were those actually captured in your spreadsheet for 2022?
Yeah, that was that section that shows up under additional payments.
Okay.
It's not rolled up into the first quarter. The late payments are shown on that fifth entry that shows additional payments. It shows first quarter, second quarter, third, fourth, additional payments as its own quarter, and that's, I believe that number was 35,000.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Okay, very good.
34,000 in.
Okay.
I would remind the group that this is the sole taxpayer. When I talked to Jonathan before Bill was on hand here and others that have been along for the ride longer than I've been here, that this same one in the same two hotels has given us problems for 10 years. 10 years of delinquency and bad payments, no payments, long before COVID even hit. So this one particular taxpayer has that bad a record to rely upon as we go into deliberations on how to strengthen our code.
Thanks, Rick. Would you like to continue your report?
I sure would. We're going to look at sales tax for January next. And all 3 months, January, February, and March, were stellar months, and they were higher than any January, February, March in any preceding year, which means we've had an astounding first quarter. You should be looking at the January sales tax report, and in the midsection of the spreadsheet, it shows that we came in at $3,297,918 compared to $2,607,362 in 2021. That was an increase year over year of $690,556 or 26.48%. So for January, we're ahead of the game compared to the previous year by almost 26.5%. And then there's a little graph that doesn't show you much because it's only 1 month. So we have one little blip over here on the left, this turquoise blip. It'll look better when we have more months to show here. I'm gonna go to February's report. February's report is very similar to January's. The current sales tax for February was up 19%. The total receipts was $2,833,370. And let's see if I... Right. And that compares to $2.4 million the year before. So once again, we're up 19%. If you look at the year-to-date figure, year-to-date at the end of February was $6.1 million for 2022 compared to about $5 million for 2021. That represented a $1,143,523 year-over-year increase. Year-to-date, 2.93%. Then the graph looks like this. It's this new turquoise, once again, mirroring the last 2 or 3 years, almost exactly, with a substantial increase. The green line going straight across represents our annual budget. If you smooth our annual budget into 12 equal portions, you can see that over budget in January, a little under budget in February. Now, as we go on into the month, I'm now showing March's report. In March, you can see that we're up 18% just for the month of March. And for the year to date, we're at $10,300,000 compared to $8,500,000 the year before. That represents an increase of $1,788,733 or 20.91% year-to-date percent increase. If you want to compare it to budget, I'll scroll down here to the bottom of the screen. You can see that obviously, we should be at 25% budget at the end of March. One quarter of the year, we're actually looking at 27.3% our gross sales tax revenues coming in a little bit ahead of budget. And now the graph makes a little bit more sense. So you can see 3 years, 3 months of return compared to the previous years. March again, skyrocketing way high up above the budget figure, which again is that solid, straight green line going across. This report also shows at the bottom of the screen the last 3 fiscal years, because the legislator wanted to see how it compared to 2019 last year when we were looking at 21, so I just kept 2019 out there as a reference point. You can see how the first 3 months compared to the previous 3 years. But as I said before, it's the best quarter, first quarter on record, and I think we should be happy with proceeds over $10 million coming in so far for the county. Any questions on sales tax?
Veronica?
Thank you. Thank you, Rick. First, this is fantastic. If I had confetti, I would throw it. Maybe not literally. One thing I see in your monthly reports is that it breaks down the sales tax by whether the activity was inside or outside the city, and it looks like the balance of that really changes from month to month. Like,
yeah,
in March, the within-city tax is way up and outside isn't, but it kind of flips the other way around earlier. Why is that? Do you know?
In the earlier months, they're usually a little bit more consistent, like the first 2 months of the year. Let me look at January's. It's just the way that the state reports that to us. And like in January here, you see the county and the municipality portions are higher, but the city is low. In February's, you see that the city's highest and the county and the city are much closer to the same. And then when you look at March, you see the city being way up and the municipalities being actually negative, actually being down. So it's a very uneven stream. but we just get it as we receive it from the state. That's why we always feel that the quarterly report is when they make most of their adjustments before they finalize the quarter. And the quarterly report is usually a little bit more moderated so that it's closer. But like I said, we get it as the way the state collects it and remits it to us.
So if I'm understanding right, you're saying these numbers don't reflect that sales actually, like, skyrocketed in the city of Ithaca specifically in March and not outside it. It's reflecting oddities in the way this all processes through the state?
Yeah, I like to think that it does show some current trends. If you look at over a long enough period, like if you want to look at the city of Ithaca over 4 or 5 years, or just the county over 4 or 5 years, I'd like to say that it does capture some trend. If, for example, if Lisa, who will be using these numbers for her sales tax projections in the next week or so when they do the budget retreat, we do rely upon these trends. But the state makes so many adjustments at the end of each quarter, and it also has to do with late payers. Just like we have delinquent and late payers for occupancy tax, the state also gets late payments from previous quarters from sales taxpayers throughout the county. And so they can only get it to us as it comes from their remittances from the taxpayers themselves. I would think the trend analysis is pretty good over a long period of time, 4 or 5 years plus. But no, at any one given, if you're looking month to month, they do radically differ.
That makes sense. Thank you.
Randy Brown.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Rick. I hate to put water on the confetti, but part of this is a percentage of the rising cost of everything. So everything's gone way up in price, so obviously you're going to collect more sales tax. So I think that although it's good news for the county, it's not good news for the people paying the bills. So, sure.
Thank you, Randy. Deb Dawson.
Yeah, Shauna, and thank you, Rick. As always, a stellar report. I do have a couple of questions. One is a question that's held over from prior years when you started including these graphs that compared the performance, yeah, down those graphs, yeah. When you started including those in the reports, one of the questions that one of my colleagues had was how much we could trust the figures, since in most years they seem to follow exactly the same pattern of ups and downs. And I was wondering if you've been able to ascertain as we get to the end of each year, whether these figures are in fact accurate or if the state of New York is just kind of estimating what our revenues should be based on prior years.
I honestly don't know the state formula. Nobody really does how these monies are handed over to the counties. We do know that they have some predisposed linkage to prior calendar years, which seems to be pretty obvious since they cover that same pattern.
They have the same pattern, yeah.
For at least 3 or 4 years. I'm sure if we added a fourth or fifth year, they would probably be similar. So a lot of their distribution method, I think, relies on prior year, their prior year equity distribution. And that they keep changing their forecast and maybe modeling it a little bit differently from year to year. But I think a lot of it is what you referenced in the second part of your statement, that it's state formula driven and not necessarily actual receipts collected in the area. But I do know that the actual receipts collected in the area are reported to us with some precision, because they break them down into the various different components, the 4%, the 3%, the 1%, the different inside the city limits, outside the city limits. So how much of that is based on real receipts and then modeled a bit or colored with their forecasting formula, I don't know. But it's never, ever been a satisfactory answer to give to you. But that's the best I can do in that we as county treasurers or finance directors can't know with any certainty how the state makes these allocations.
But you do know that at the end of the year, we end up with the amount of money that they say we should, right?
That's what they tell us.
Okay, all right. So
that's what we can only, once again, we can only rely upon, you know, the forthrightness and honesty of the state. Doesn't that give you a warm and fuzzy?
I'm very warm and fuzzy. So I just have one other question for you. I noticed you've been going through the numbers, so I know that we had the best quarter ever, but as you reviewed the numbers, how much we're up year to date, at the end of January it was close to 26.5. At the end of February it was just under 23. Now for March it's just around 20. So I'm wondering, is that a trend that it's going down as we move through the year? Should we be concerned, or is it too soon to tell?
It's really too soon to tell. One of the things that you can tell if you look at, like, this data on a bar graph comparing, like, 10 years' worth of data, you can see which are your weakest months and your strongest months. Your weaker months are usually in the beginning more, kind of like what we've just been through, which kind of gives me a hallelujah. To think about what could be coming later in the year. Your warmer months are typically better. Our biggest months are usually November and December because of the holidays and the consumer spending that takes place over those holidays. So there is some record to knowing which are our weaker months compared to our stronger months. Again, you have to look at it over a longer time horizon, like 10 years, to speak with any certainty. Some places don't do a straight line budget like this to show an annualized budget broken into 12 equal parts. A lot of counties will do a budget based on those projection factors. So you might have an actual budget for January being much smaller than an annual budget for December. And that might be something that could be refined, and those prognostications could be made maybe through the county administration office as they begin to monitor sales tax. Usually when I'm done with this report, it's about as in-depth as we go. I move on to other things, but I know up in county budgeting, county administration, they'll be looking at sales tax projections starting now, right up until when you adopt your budget, or at least come close to adopting your budget in September, October, forecasting, reforecasting, remodeling the numbers, and maybe at that point they might come up with an annualized budget that's more based on trends than just straight line across the board.
I don't know. I think it's hard enough to just ballpark it for a year, so I, for one, wouldn't ask them to do that, but it's up to them. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Rick, do you have anything else for us this evening?
Nope, that's all I had for tonight. We still have a very weak or poor showing in applicants for the Director of Accounting Services. We may extend that deadline. We have a very good response for the Finance Accounts Payable position, which is closed, and we should be getting interviews soon. We have about 17 applicants for that. Most are qualified for it. But, you know, I don't know, because it's a higher level position, level management position. We're not getting a good response for the Director of Accounting Services, so we'll keep advertising and keep trying to find people who might be able to come in and fill that position.
Great. Thank you, Rick, for the report. And as always, we appreciate how detailed it is and for answering our questions.
You're welcome.
Okay. Are there any resolutions to be added or to be withdrawn from the agenda? I see none. Let's move on to our consent agenda. Resolutions and appointments to be voted on as a group, unless any member of the legislature requests that a resolution or appointment be instead included separately and individually as part of the business of standing or special committees. Do you have a few advisory board appointments? ID 10800, Health and Human Services Committee, Mental Health Subcommittee, Tracy Decker, community member, term expires December 31st, 2025. Substance Abuse Subcommittee, Marley Brooks, community member, term expires December 31st, 2024. Community Mental Health Services Board, Tom Lipa, member, term expires December 31st, 2023. Tompkins County Youth Services Board, Kathleen Kelly McKenzie, Town of Caroline representative, term expires December 31st, 2023. Health and Human Services Committee, Resolution A, Budget Adjustment, Unmet Needs, Home Health Aides, Tompkins County Office for the Aging, ID 10569, Resolution B, this is a revised resolution, so please check your email for the revised resolution and in your red folders for those of you that are in person. That is a budget adjustment reappropriation of long-term ombudsman program, LTCOP, grant funds, Tompkins County Office for the Aging, ID 10868. Resolution C, budget adjustment, COVID funding, health department, ID 10862. Planning, Development and Environmental Quality Committee, Resolution D, Award of Bid, Exterior Landscaping and Snow Removal Services, Recycling and Materials Management Department, ID 10816. Resolution E, Award of Bid, Pavement Upgrades, Recycling and Materials Management Department, ID 10814. Can I have a mover, please? Moved by Veronica, seconded by Amanda. And we will do a roll call.
Ann Corman.
Yes.
Mike Lane.
Yes.
Greg Mezzi.
Yes.
Veronica Piller.
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff.
Yes.
Mike Sigler.
Yes.
Travis Brooks.
Yes.
Randy Brown.
Yes.
Amanda Champion.
Yes.
Deborah Dawson.
Yes.
Henry Grandison.
Yes.
Rich John.
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, zero noes.
Thank you, Kathy. Now on to our standing and special committees. Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee, Henry Grandison, Chair.
Yes, we have not met since the last legislative meeting, so we meet tomorrow to discuss the mixed meeting. Otherwise, nothing to say.
Any questions for Henry? Okay. Thanks, Henry. Next is the Public Safety Committee. Rich John, Chair.
Thank you, Shauna. The Public Safety Committee will be meeting this Thursday, April 21st at 3 o'clock. We're going to get a report on moving forward with one aspect of the reimagining public safety effort, which is thinking about alternative response involving mental health and wraparound services. There also were a lot of developments in the New York State budget that affect local public safety, and we're going to get a report on some of those developments. And then our typical order of business. Happy to try to answer any questions.
Are there any questions for Rich John? Okay, I see none. Thanks, Rich. Health and Human Services, Dan Klein, Chair.
Madam Chair, I'd like to give my report first and then do my resolutions. At the April 18th Health and Human Services Committee meeting, we heard a presentation from the County Health Department and the Reality Check Program about tobacco sales enforcement in Tompkins County. Several tobacco control laws went into effect statewide in 2020, around the same time as the pandemic hit. Our enforcement efforts were minimal during the pandemic, but have started up again. Things that are prohibited include the sale of flavored vape products that contain nicotine, tobacco sales to anyone under 21, price discounts on tobacco or vape products, advertising within 1,000 feet of schools, and tobacco sales in pharmacies. The Health Department conducts two kinds of enforcement activities: attempts to purchase products using underage people, and unannounced general compliance checks. There are approximately 60 tobacco retail outlets in this county. During the past year, the Health Department conducted 52 attempts by underage people to purchase tobaccos, and three were successful. 9 retail outlets had other violations. The fines can be substantial, particularly for the vape products. If there are 3 violations within 3 years, the store's tobacco license and lotto licenses can be suspended. Concerning the so-called sticker stores, the Health Department does not have authority to regulate them. Sticker stores are stores that, quote-unquote, gift marijuana when a customer purchases a trivial item such as a sticker. It is not yet known if county health departments will have any enforcement role when the cannabis regulations are rolled out later this year or early next year. In department updates, we heard from the Department of Social Services that Code Blue is over for the year. Code Blue is a New York State program that provides overnight housing when the temperature drops below 32 degrees. However, we are still able to provide emergency overnight housing through other programs and through other funding. The County Youth Services Department reported that the Open Doors program for runaway and homeless youth will hopefully be up and running by next month. They also reported that their annual summer camp guide is now available. The Health Department informed us that the New York State budget included an increase in their allocation, their base allocation, from $650,000 to $750,000, and also a provision that employee fringe benefit costs can now be charged to this allocation. Both of these items were something that county health departments have been asking for a long time. The County Office for the Aging reported that instead of their usual annual luncheon, they will be having an open house at their offices on May 13th from noon to 3 o'clock. Earlier this year, the county legislature voted to ask New York State to raise the minimum wage for home health aides. The New York State budget that was just passed did contain a $3 an hour raise in the wages of home health aides. It's not as big as it could have been, but it is something. Our next committee meeting will be on Monday, May 16th at 3 o'clock. We will have a presentation from Melissa Perry of the Child Development Council about the state of child care in Tompkins County, plus an update on several large child care building projects that have only received partial funding. And then finally, a proposal is being made tomorrow evening to the City of Ithaca's Planning Committee. This is what Patrick Meller referenced earlier, concerning a new approach to homeless encampments. If the committee gives the green light to this proposal, then our Health and Human Services Committee will also have a presentation about this next month. That's my report.
Great report, Dan. Are there any questions for Dan? Okay.
Okay. Two resolutions. Resolution F, appropriation from contingent fund for terminal pay, Health Department. ID 10861.
Can I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Veronica. Would you like to talk to this resolution, Dan?
It's a pretty straightforward one that we do normally when someone leaves and we pay them out of the contingent fund instead of out of the department fund.
Okay. Thank you. Any questions or comments on this resolution? Okay. Let's do a roll call.
Ann Corman.
Yes.
Mike Lane.
Yes.
Greg Mezzi.
Yes.
Veronica Pillar.
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff.
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
With 14 ayes, 0 noes.
Okay, next resolution is G, appropriation from emergency disaster assistance funds for community surveillance testing for Tompkins County residents related to COVID-19, and I so move.
Can I have a seconder? Seconded by Randy Brown.
So this resolution is just collecting on the FEMA money that we've been waiting for.
Thank you, Dan. Any questions for Dan? Lee Shurtleff?
More a comment. It's a significant amount for those that are listening. This is a $3.2 million reimbursement from FEMA for COVID testing, primarily carried out by Cayuga Medical Systems. Is that what I read?
I believe that's correct, yeah.
Significant.
It is significant.
Okay, any other questions or comments on this resolution? Okay, let's do a roll call vote. Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes. Great. Anything else, Dan?
Oh, thanks.
Okay. Thank you very much. And let's move on to Facilities and Infrastructure Committee. Mike Lane, Chair.
Thank you. Our committee's been busy. On April 13th, we had the first of our special meetings having to do with the downtown facilities and the downtown campus. I thought it went pretty well. We accomplished a lot of things. Among other things, Lisa Holmes had brought us the 2019 space needs summary that was done by Holt Engineers at that time. We went through the various topics that were discussed in that update, executive summary or whatever you want to call it, and the various options that were given, and we talked about changes that had been made. We also had a document that was actually, Lisa told us, prepared by Aurel Lamaro, talking about the various kinds of things that we need to do in the downtown campus, the decisions that have to be made, and we had a good discussion about that as we went through. So we've got sort of a guideline of where we're going, and I know Ann Corman is one who spoke about having a decision tree, and that is something like a decision tree that we've had, and we'll be talking more about that. We won't have another special meeting until probably not next month, but the next month after that. We will be talking about this some at the regular facilities meeting. There will be a tour of the dental building, and it's 405 Tioga Street, I believe, the red house. And that's going to be this Thursday before the regular F&I meeting, and we will meet at 8 a.m. in front of the dental building to have that tour. That is our committee, but any other legislator is certainly welcome to be there and join us on that tour of the condition and the various things that have to do with those buildings. I did want to mention that today the ITCTC, Ithaca Tompkins County Transportation Council Policy Committee met. And a lot of the things were discussed with respect to the Transportation Improvement Plan, the TIP. Just a couple of highlights. The New York State Department of Transportation Representative Dave Smith was there, and he spoke about the building of the Route 34 bridge that we know has been closed all winter, And he said that just as soon as it gets a little bit warmer, they'll be doing the concrete for the driving surface on the bridge. And they are still targeting, they believe they're still on schedule to have it opened to traffic late spring, early summer. So it's getting closer to getting that opened up again. Rich, to your point about the Cecil Malone Bridge, we heard Tim Logue speak about some of the city projects, and he did mention that one and said that, and I can't remember, Randy Brown was there with me this afternoon. I can't remember if he said whether they were going to start building that this year or next year.
I think it was next year.
Next year. But that it would have sidewalks on both sides. They would take down, they would use the existing footbridge to use for pedestrian crossing during construction. And then when they had the new bridge built, they were going to move that pedestrian bridge for use at another location in the future. So I thought those things were kind of interesting. We will have our regular meeting of the F&I committee. That will be day after tomorrow, Thursday, April 21st at 9 a.m. at Legislative Chambers. And, of course, that's after the tour that I described. I don't have any resolutions, but happy to answer any questions. Randy, did I miss anything?
We did talk about at the special meeting, IT gave quite a presentation and discussion that lasted probably a good 45 minutes about how critical and difficult it is to move their operations and how they believe there's no possible way they can move more than once. So wherever they go, that's going to be very important. And there's a lot of complex issues there. So I was going to add that. Oh, the other thing was that it was in the budget to finish to update the space study, and that's going to move forward.
So. Yeah, that's going to move forward with hold, but it's only for the update of the space study. When we get to the point of having to hire a consultant, architects or engineers with respect to, say, a building, we want to see an open process for that.
That's great. Thank you, Randy. Thank you, Mike. Any questions for Mike or Randy? Dan?
I just want to check. That's 8 a.m. this Thursday?
Yes.
Thank you.
I know many of our legislators love those early meetings. Okay.
Get up and get going.
That's what I say. I have three kids. I'm always up. Okay. Any other questions? Okay. Thank you. Next, we have Government Operations Committee, Amanda Champion, Chair.
Thank you very much. Government Operations will be meeting on May 5th, which is in about 2 weeks. We are probably going to have a pretty packed agenda. We are probably going to have a presentation from the library, just an update on what's going on for them. We also are going to have a very initial discussion with Jay Franklin from Assessment about the possibility of a tax exemption for volunteer firefighters and emergency service personnel. So that will just be a discussion. I think there'll be a couple other things that I can't remember at the moment, but as always, it will be riveting and wonderful. So please join us.
Thank you, Amanda. Any questions for Amanda? Okay. Next up is Planning, Development, and Environmental Quality Committee, Ann Corman, Chair.
Thanks, Madam Chair. We have not met since we last had our legislative, since we last had our last meeting here, the legislative meeting. We are meeting on Monday, this coming Monday, April 25th at 1:30. And we have quite a few things on our agenda. One thing that I would like to make sure that we spend a good amount of time on is Scott Doyle from our planning department is going to help us review the county resiliency and recovery plan and give a report on that, on what has been done so far and a little bit of what are the next steps are. And I'm not sure if everybody's heard, if it was can't remember if it was announced at last meeting, but this will be Scott Doyle's last PDEC meeting as he's moving over to a great position at Ithaca College. So some of the other things on our meeting include an update from Recycling and Materials Management on the glass and recycling drop-off program. And we'll also have a resolution on for reimagining the workplace employment, and that's through our Office of Employment and Training. We're going to have a tourism program update, with including the awards on the Tompkins County Outdoor Grants, the Convention and Visitors Bureau is also going to have an update, or their yearly annual report, I should say. And we are also going to be looking at some resolutions regarding the Natural Infrastructure Capital Program, giving an award to help the two properties, the Lickbrook property at Route 13 and also Bolton Point. I'm sorry, Bell Station, the Bell Station property. And that's, I believe, all we have on the agenda for this Monday, 1:30, this channel. Thank you.
Thanks, Ann. And we are very sad to hear Scott Doyle leaving the county, and we wish him the best in his new endeavor. Any questions for Ann Corman or comments? Thanks, Annie. Budget, Capital, and Personnel Committee, Deborah Dawson, Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In addition to the resolutions that are on tonight's agenda, we also passed a resolution for an amendment to the county's fiscal policy that would eliminate rollover for departments. This would be replaced by a couple of changes that we've made in budgeting. We have a computer equipment capital program now, which will cover the department's computers and IT equipment. We also have a centralized vehicle procurement under the green fleet policy. And since rollover has primarily been used for cars and computers, this should pretty much cover the purposes that we had rollover for in the past. That resolution is not on the agenda tonight because it will be part of the riveting and wonderful agenda that GEO will be covering on May 5th. So with that said, we have a resolution to, adoption of Juneteenth. Is that the next one? No, sorry. I was reading my BCP agenda. We have Resolution H, appropriation from contingent fund and award of contract, Tompkins County Recovery Grant Program, ID 10850, and I move that.
And seconded by Greg Muzzy. Would you like to talk to this resolution, Deb?
I actually would prefer to have Lisa Holmes address it if she's still with us.
Okay. Hi, Lisa.
Hi. So thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Deborah. This resolution would it originated from the Workforce Diversity Inclusion Committee and would make Juneteenth a paid holiday. Oh, I'm sorry.
I think
no,
it's
this is the Community Recovery Grant Program.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm sorry.
No, I know. You and I are on the same different page from everybody else.
Oh, goodness. I'm so sorry. This did not come through the Workforce Diversity and Inclusion Committee. This resolution it calls for the selection of a vendor to assist us in administering the Community Recovery Fund. We went through a process, an RFP process, for vendor selection, which began at the end of 2021 and through various selection process and clarification process with the legislature to hone in on what that grant is going to program is going to look like, and among the vendors that responded to the RFP, the MRB group rose to the top in the selection process in terms of being able to assist us and guide us in the program that I think most closely resembles what the legislature is hoping to achieve through this process, and can help us to guide and shape that and make the process both equitable and expeditious in getting it out into the community. So we're pleased with this and looking forward to working with them, and happy to answer any questions you may have.
Any questions for Lisa? Dan Klein?
Lisa, I'm not sure how you'll be able, if or how you'll be able to answer this, but I remember that this grant was different. This bid was different than the other ones in that it charged basically per grant that it administered as part of its fee. And so it seems like that the amount we're going to end up paying them is a little bit unknown. So I'm just wondering, should we expect that there might be a little more that we need to pay later on to this organization as part of administering this grant?
So, Dan, you're correct. That's a hard question to answer, but you're correct that it is a little bit of an unknown. We did factor in what we thought may be a high end, but again, we're uncertain as to how many grants we will be receiving, but in terms of their pricing structure and how they saw their work assisting potential applicants from start to finish to successful completion, we thought that the number that we pegged would be fairly realistic. It pays for approximately 30 assistance visits. So it could be higher, but this is a work in progress, and I think that, you know, we tried to be as accurate as possible.
Thanks. I guess that was part of my reason for asking the question, too, is to alert my colleagues and the public that this is may just be the beginning. It won't be a lot more, probably, but it could be a little more later on.
Thank you. That's true.
Thank you.
Thanks, Dan. Any other questions or comments on this resolution? Let's bring this to a roll call vote.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Ziegler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. Deb, you want to move the other two resolutions?
I sure do, but first I want to thank everybody. I'm just really gratified that we're taking this step towards getting that Community Recovery Fund program up and running and the money out the door. And now we will get to the resolution that we're all looking forward to, which is Resolution I, adoption of Juneteenth as a paid employee holiday. ID 10832, and I move.
Can I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Henry Granison. Yep, got it. And any questions, comments? Mike Lane? Oh, sorry, Deb. You want to explain
Deb, go first.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is pretty self-explanatory. We're adding Juneteenth to our schedule of holidays for our employees. But I want to thank Henry Granison and the WDIC committee because they did the work on this, and I'm sure that they're going to be very happy when this gets added to our county's schedule. So thanks, Henry.
Thank you.
Thank you, Henry. Mike Lane.
I certainly think this is a fine historical event for us to celebrate with a holiday. Every time we add a holiday, it reduces, to some extent, our productivity. But, you know, in a lot of the industrialized world, employees get much more time off, much more personal time, much more vacation time than we have here in the United States. I think holidays are important to have for our employees. I think they look forward to them. It gives them a break from the toils of their job. I remember my parents worked in factories. They never had more than six holidays: Christmas and New Year's, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day. I think that's all. We give more than that with our contracts, and I'm glad we do. People need to have a little bit more available time for themselves and their families.
Thank you, Mike. Any other questions or comments? Ann Corman?
Thank you. I'm very proud to be able to vote for this tonight, and I appreciate all, you know, the committees that worked on this, administration, and even finance. But I want to just read just a little bit from the resolution, if I could, for just a couple seconds.
Sure.
Whereas Juneteenth is a commemorative observance of the hardships and losses suffered by African Americans in their struggle to attain freedom from slavery, to recognize and pay tribute to the memory of those who made the ultimate sacrifice in this quest. And so I encourage people to read the resolution. It talks more about the history here in the county and in the United States. And again, I'm very proud to vote for this. There were not the first ones to pass this. A lot of other places have already passed this. So I think this is, in some ways, the least we can do. But it's actually very important that we're doing it. So thank you.
Thank you, Anne. And I just want to thank Henry as well. I know that last year we had actually talked about this a little bit, and other things came up, and it was Juneteenth before we knew it, and it was too late to pass it for last year, but I'm glad we got ahead of it this year. And I also think that it's very important that we recognize our history, and that we allow our staff and our community to have the time off. And I, you know, also see it as it's about time, because we are probably one of the last employers to actually allow for Juneteenth, the holiday. So I'm glad to see us take this step forward. Let's do a roll call vote.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Piller?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Grandison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
Thank you. Deb, would you like to do your last resolution?
Yes, ma'am. That's Resolution J, Adjustment to the 2022 Budget, City-County Sales Tax Distribution Agreement, ID 10808, and I move that.
Can I have a seconder, please? Seconded by Rich John. Would you like to explain the resolution?
Oh, I was afraid you were going to ask me that. As I understand it, this is just addressing the need to pay the city additional sales tax over and above what we had projected and adopted.
Does that sound right, Rick?
Yeah, I would just say what I had at the committee level the other day, in that our city-county sales tax agreement, which is an odd and old agreement with the city of Ithaca, has a formula in it, and it we give to certain organizations in tandem with the city of Ithaca, and part of our 1% sales tax goes to the city of Ithaca. The agreement for 2022 uses actual numbers from 2021, which is a standard form of coming up with the payments that they're paid quarterly in any fiscal year. That means they're always 1 year behind getting their distribution from us. That being said, in 2020, when everybody took a shellacking and sales tax was down, City of Ithaca didn't feel it in their agreement because it was based on the prior year. Last year, in 2021, because of COVID, they felt it very badly for the same reason. Now that we're into 2022, we rely upon 2021's figures, which were much healthier and much higher than what was in either our budget or their budget for sales tax. So this budget adjustment basically adds $225,000 into our budget and the City of Ithaca's budget based on that agreement, which is always 1 year behind actual sales tax revenue.
Thank you, Rick. Any questions for Rick or Deborah? Ann Corman?
Yes.
Do you have a question?
Oh, no, that was an old man. Sorry okay. about that.
Okay, let's do a roll call vote.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
No.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
13 ayes, 1 no.
Anything else, Deb?
No, ma'am.
Okay. Any questions for Deborah? Okay. We do not have any individual member filed resolutions. We do have minutes from a previous meeting, April 5th, 2022. Can I have someone move those, please? Moved by Ann Corman, seconded by Dan Klein. And let's do a roll call.
Wait, can I?
Oh, sorry.
Ask the question.
Questions
first?
Or comments?
I had asked Kathy to edit a couple of things. Maybe Kathy can speak. I don't know if there's substantive enough, especially the vote count one, to mention.
No, because I did check the record, and the vote that was in the minutes that were distributed was incorrect, and we've made that correction.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Sure. Thank you. Any other questions or comments on the minutes of April 5th, 2022? Okay, let's do a roll call.
Ann Corman?
Yes.
Mike Lane?
Yes.
Greg Mezzi?
Yes.
Veronica Pillar?
Yes.
Lee Shurtleff?
Yes.
Mike Sigler?
Yes.
Travis Brooks?
Yes.
Randy Brown?
Yes.
Amanda Champion?
Yes.
Deborah Dawson?
Yes.
Henry Granison?
Yes.
Rich John?
Yes.
Dan Klein?
Yes.
Shauna Black?
Yes.
14 ayes, 0 noes.
We do not have any unfinished business this evening. Can I have a mover to adjourn the meeting? Moved by Randy Brown, seconded by Veronica Pillar. And,
no, you don't need
to. Okay, all in favor? Okay, thank you all. Have a great night.